Oh, it's good to be with you. My name's Simon Smart, and you're listening to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity. Michael Ware is an Australian journalist who spent years in Afghanistan and then Iraq working for Time and CNN. But Ware's not your average journalist. He spent time with insurgents in Iraq and with US troops in some of the heaviest and bloodiest fighting of the war. He once came very close to being beheaded by Al-Qaeda in Iraq. His film, Only the Dead, is out in cinemas now. This is a documentary that's not for the faint-hearted, or anyone under 18 actually, but it's a profound comment, not only on war itself, but on the human condition. Michael Ware, thanks so much for coming in.
Mate, thank you very much for having me.
And congratulations on the film. It's a powerful piece of work. I'm not sure I'd say I enjoyed it, but I was very glad to have seen it. Now, I want to ask you, first of all, how did a boy from Brisbane get attracted to the sort of world you ended up in as a journalist?
That's very hard to say because, you know, I never set out in life to become a journalist. I almost literally tripped over and fell into journalism. And I started at Brisbane's Courier Mail newspaper. And it was in 99, 2000 when I had my first ever taste of a foreign story, where I was sent to East Timor for a few weeks to relieve a journalist who was already there. Well, that was enough for me. From that moment on, I knew there was no other kind of reporting that I wanted to do. So from there, I ended up at Time magazine. And like so many other people, after 9/11, my life changed forever. I was sent to Afghanistan for what was originally meant to be 3 weeks and turned into 13 months. And from Afghanistan, I ended up in Iraq for more than 7 years.
This was an extraordinary experience, and you see this in the film, and also the way your kind of experience of it and the way it personally affected you is very much part of this film. But let's think about what your experience in Iraq and elsewhere has taught you about human nature.
That's a great question, because there was human nature stripped bare for me almost each and every day. War is life lived very much to an extreme. And there you see the best and the worst of us. And even beyond that, you really find out who you are. Because when the bullets are flying in the air, there's nowhere to hide from yourself. I mean, each and every day, we all get through life by telling ourselves little lies, little white lies. I'm going to start training at the gym next week. I'm going to give up smoking. I'm going to do my taxes. But when you're on that front line, there are no lies. You really find out who you are, and you find out who the people around you are. I saw good men do evil, and I saw evil men do good. So really, it was about seeing both of those things live inside the same person. That, for me, was part of the great revelation.
You get a very strong sense in the film, especially of the darkness, though,
yes,
of the human heart.
Yes.
So you're someone who's pretty much alive to that idea.
Joseph Conrad wrote about this very thing in the 1890s in The Heart of Darkness. The great American director, Francis Ford Coppola, took that story and turned it into an amazing feature film in 1979, Apocalypse Now. Well, what I discovered when I came home from Iraq and realised I had these hundreds of hours of tape, the story that was buried within those tapes was the story of The Heart of Darkness that I'd filmed accidentally. And so in the film, as you see me on a journey through the most hellish parts of the war, trying to find and to understand the man who created what we now call the Islamic State, part of the greatest discovery, if that's the way to describe it, that I did make, was that heart of darkness dwelling even within myself.
You also saw close hand some of the most brutal acts of al-Zarqawi's men.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that of a different order to what you're talking about here when you're saying, you know, the darkness in each of us? But you saw some pretty dreadful things.
Yeah, I really did.
Would you describe it as evil?
I find terms like, you know, true good and pure evil very pejorative terms. Because as I said before, I saw some of the worst people you can imagine to great and small kindnesses to those around them. It turns out Al-Qaeda and the Islamic State are people too. No matter how much it suits us to demonize them, no one is one-dimensional. There was a member of what we now call the Islamic State who I knew before he was sucked into the Islamic State. And once he was in that vicious and barbarous organization, he did something that saved my life. I also would be able to visit him in his home, and I would bounce his baby boy on my knee, and I would lose hours just playing with his kid. Yet the things that his father eventually came to do are things that I could never countenance and I will always condemn. But I'll never forget that little boy.
No, it's complex, isn't it?
Look, it really, really is.
And that's very often what's missing in any discussion of this type of issue, isn't it?
It's very hard for people back home to grasp the full complexities of these things. And let's face it, the Middle East is just a sinkhole of complexity. Mm. But when we talk about the nature of evil, and obviously this is something that I've delved into a lot since I've come home, you know, I often sit and wonder, did Osama bin Laden wake up every morning and decide that he was going to be evil today? I suspect not. He believed in the righteousness of what he was doing. Absolutists, I find, are the most dangerous people. Yeah. People who cannot be negotiated with, who are so convinced, so blindly convinced of the righteousness of their own thoughts or their own path, that nothing else can come into their consideration. They are truly dangerous people. They're the ones who lose their humanity, for whom it's most at risk.
Yes, and that can work in every different direction, can't it?
Oh, look, yeah. It could be, you know, Islamic extremists. It can be political ideologues. Heck, it can even be Democrats, you know, pure, hardcore promoters of democracy. If they're that blinkered in their vision of it, then they too can do great and terrible things.
Now, you had an experience that everyone asks you about, and you probably get tired of talking
this
about,
is the but kidnapping. It's
the kidnapping by Al-Qaeda in Iraq. Mm-hmm. So let's not go into the details of that. Mm-hmm. People can see the film. But I do want to ask you, after that incredible experience where you were at great risk of literally being beheaded.
Yeah, they were about to behead me right there, and they were going to film my beheading with my own camera that they'd wrenched from my hands.
Now, I want to suggest that many of us might have at that point said, I've had
I'm going to retire her.
I'm going home.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't be thought of as a wimp.
No.
What makes you stay? Is it at the point, because that was early on, right?
But I'd been there for a year and a half by that point.
You stayed quite a long time after that.
Yeah, I said.
Is it that the kind of adrenaline of this thing gets you?
What compelled me to stay through that event and all the events that followed? Because that wasn't, sadly, the only traumatic event I experienced. I felt compelled to finish telling the story. The story wasn't over. But also it was those around me. I couldn't leave, or the way I felt, abandon those around me. It was carrying the stories of the voiceless that mattered so much to me. Now, that could be the poor young American grunt on a terrible front line who was under attack day after day after day, or it could be the Iraqi kids who lived in the house next door. I was fixed in Iraq by that compulsion to finish the story.
If you've just joined us, you're listening to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity. I want to ask you about religion and violence. Would you be someone who says, yes, religion causes violence?
No, people cause violence. Mm-hmm.
So how do you respond to that type of statement, though?
Well, I think that's very black and white, a very monochrome view of human nature and of religion itself. It's not religion that causes violence, it's what people do in the name of those religions. And we've seen that throughout world history.
Yeah.
Religions that preach of peace can still be intoned in the name of war. It's not religion that starts wars, it's we who do that.
And presumably you've met many very religious people who are peaceful, not violent.
Yeah, of course, we all have, right? I mean, that's the vast majority, isn't it, of religious people? Isn't it only micro percentages of people of faith who are these violent extremists, whatever that religion may be. I mean, there's been awful things done throughout history in the name of religion, but by no means does that define those religious beliefs.
No. When you think about Syria and Iraq now, and then the violence that is at least touching other parts of the world that's coming out of there, what's your sense of where this is going? Are you fearful about the way it might proceed?
Put it this way. The Islamic State has redrawn the borders of the Middle East right under the noses of the international community. The border between Iraq and Syria has been completely dissolved. These people have created a proto-state in which something like the population of the United Kingdom lives within the Islamic State's domain. They collect taxes, they pay teachers, they collect the rubbish, they provide electricity, and they do some of the most heinous and barbarous things. The Islamic State, unfortunately, is something that we're going to have to learn to live with in one form or another for some time to come, because this is a generational war, this is a generational conflict, both with bombs and bullets and in terms of ideas.
In the film, Michael, you make a big point of a shift that you sensed within yourself. What was the nature of that shift and why do you think it occurred?
I guess in one sense, looking back, it was like drips of water, bit by bit, a little bit day by day, I was changing. But even during the war, even over those years, there were certain periods where I had moments of self-realisation, where even I could see the things inside me had been shifting. But a lot of that has to do with being in war. It's trite to say, but war changes you. That place you have to go as a soldier or even just as a civilian trying to survive amongst the bloodshed, that place you have to go in your head and your heart is a very tough and often dark place indeed, particularly for the soldiers, particularly for the combatants. I mean, it's kill or be killed. It's no small thing to take a life. It's no small thing to lose a brother beside you. It really does change you. And, you know, for me, there was a certain point during the Battle of Fallujah where it was brought into stark focus that I no longer cared about dying myself. By the time we get to the end of the film and you see where eventually I've landed as a human being, I'd become so desensitized to the suffering of others that it was very hard for me to hang on to my own humanity. I mean, there's an incident where I'm trying to film these American soldiers and to capture their indifference to a man's suffering. Yet at the same time, I suddenly realised I'd become as indifferent as those soldiers, whose indifference I was trying to film.
Is this film an attempt to kind of almost seek a kind of forgiveness or a confession?
Or a
sort of redemption?
Yeah, I was going to say, it's not quite a redemption. I guess obviously in part it is confession. I mean, I'm often asked if I have any regrets from things I did or didn't do during the war. And the short answer to that is no. But I will tell you this, that all those things that I did and all those things that I didn't do come with a cost. And I'm still paying those costs. And I always will.
There's an incredible honesty in the film. How have you found people react to it generally?
While we were making it, you know, we thought that perhaps it could be very polarising, that people could judge either me or the film itself or the people you see in the film. But it has been humbling to have audience after audience in different countries take away the greater meaning and to leave the cinema asking themselves all these questions. I've just been honoured.
Well, it's not surprising that people have had that reaction. It's an amazing piece of work. Congratulations on it and thanks so much for talking.
Oh, mate, look, it was my great pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks, Michael.
Cheers.
You've been listening to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity. For more on this topic and many more, go to publicchristianity.org.